In this episode of the Guidewire podcast, I'm joined by fellow Fast Tracks engineer Nabil Khan for a discussion surrounding our newest problem discovery technique. Our techniques are being built on several existing methodologies with the express purpose of making problem discovery a lot more efficient. As it happens, the modified sprint technique we're going to discuss today translates very well to video and remote settings because it does not use shadowing. Hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Guidewire, a direct line to medical device innovation. We are the boots on the ground inside of healthcare working to uncover and solve high-impact, unmet medical needs.
All right, welcome to the Guidewire podcast. We are lucky to be joined by none other than the illustrious prototype and design engineer from Fast Tracks, Nabil Khan, no stranger to our guests on this podcast, because I think you've been on a couple other ones. But thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about some of the methodologies that we use for mining and discovering unmet needs. Nabil, I don't know if you want to say anything else about yourself.
Glad to be here again. I'm ready to talk. Let's do this.
Yeah, so we have gone through a lot of sort of changes and directions on our way to where we are now. And I think we're still continuing to iterate on it. But one of the goals of this podcast is to help elucidate the way in which medical device design is done at a large academic center. And so one of the things that we've been doing in Fast Tracks is trying to explore what we'll call the best way for us to mine for unmet needs. In going through that process, I think, Nabil, you quickly identified that the traditional ways of doing medical device innovation usually rely heavily on immersion and or shadowing. You know, basically the requirement being that you have to go in and spend hours and do your time in a procedural suite or on the floor of a hospital or in a surgical suite or whatever it might be to sort of find that proverbial needle in a haystack, you know, the one problem that you can work on or the handful of problems out of all the ones that you can see. So I thought maybe we could talk about what led you to that realization and kind of what your thought process was for leading to a change in the way that we have done our initial problem discovery at Fast Tracks. You probably have more flavor to add than I can give, so I'll yield to you on this one.
So thinking about what motivated me to not, or what dissuaded me and made me a skeptic of our original and maybe the more traditional from the biodesign sense of shadowing. It was really self-interested. One of the things I learned in my previous position as a contract design engineer for a medical contract design and development company is that when you have a problem and there's something new for you to solve, rather than trying to accumulate all that knowledge yourself, try to lean on the resources who have already invested in developing that skill set first, or as soon as you can, and try to learn from them. The way that I view shadowing is it's almost a way of bridging a knowledge gap so that you have enough literacy in the domain that you are shadowing in to be able to identify unmet needs, which is kind of what our one of the main roles we play at UNC is, to kind of identify unmet needs. And the real benefit to being naive and not thoroughly invested and have a deep, lengthy experience in a given domain is that you're not necessarily hindered by conventional wisdom. And what I mean by that is you don't necessarily conflate convention with wisdom or efficiency. I think that the utility in being quote-unquote naive to that domain, but still having enough knowledge to like bridge and understand what's going on is that you can maybe identify unmet needs that the practitioners and providers around you just don't recognize for whatever reason. And I think that's a rare occurrence. And because our job title is a little different, kind of our mission is to uncover as many unmet needs as possible. And it's just like that, relying on bridging that knowledge gap so that you can maybe discover that unmet need that no one else, you know, that lies in plain sight per se, is just, it's too improbable. It made our time really inefficient. So I think part of the motivation here was to figure out a way to leverage the knowledge and the ingenuity and, you know, critical thinking of the people all around us in a more effective manner. And I think, yeah, it's just like, don't sleep on the provider that you're shadowing. And how do we tap into that knowledge that's already there? Or how do we instruct or try to concoct a method to where if you have a bunch of providers with their own kind of lineage of experience, that you can kind of coach them or kind of lead them to coming up and uncovering and recognizing these unmet needs in a more time-efficient process.
A couple thoughts here. One, you know, it's interesting. I agree with your point about the, and actually this came up in a recent podcast of ours with Dr. Martin. For providers who have mentored teams of medical device innovators before, I've heard a common thread like, oh, having engineers in the operating room or in at the bedside with us often brings a new perspective of, I guess, as you put it, like naivety, right? There's like a, oh, did you guys realize that you could do this totally differently and it would make it a whole lot more efficient? And I think maybe these are your words from before, right? To sort of, I guess you could romanticize it, right?
I think I use the word fetishize
the idea, yeah. of being able to find an unmet need like that. And I agree, you know, maybe there is some perspective to be added. But to your point, I think what you're saying is it's just more efficient, right? It's efficient use of everyone's time to say, oh, well, hey, look, everybody here, all the providers, they see this every day. They're really ingrained in the entire process of delivery of care. They're the experts. We should be listening to them on their experiences about what is right and what is not right in their world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I just to add to that, I think if it were the case that there weren't as, you know, in the landscape and kind of that frontier of unmet needs, if most of them were not readily recognized and acknowledged and known by a given domain, I think I would be singing a different tune. And so I guess what, you know, this process or this approach does, it misses problems. I guess it's acceptable because that body of known unmet needs is so vast that it's okay.
Yeah, I agree. So Nabil, can we walk through the mechanics of this? Because I mean, what I want to get across for the listeners is it's great to talk theory and the motivation for it, but I want to understand how we can apply it. So we've been doing this a little while in Fast Tracks. So we've piloted a few different versions of this. So there's two things I'm going to ask right now. One, I want to walk through the process, but before we get to that, let me start with the question, what are we doing now that's different from the original sort of shadowing and observation techniques that we were employing? And like, where did that come from? Can we start with that?
Yeah, sure. So what are we doing differently? I think, first off, we're not shadowing. We're not, or at least when we pursue these group sessions, there is no shadowing. I think the most essential component are engaged providers. So that's, you need to have access to a group of providers. For us so far, it's made sense for them to come from a specific department or division.
Like, name an example.
Yeah, sure. So we've done sprints with VIR. We've done sprints with hospital medicine. We've done sprints with a specific division of obstetrics and gynecology, their MIGS division, the minimally invasive gynecological surgery. But having a pool of people with a specific domain expertise is helpful, and it helps focus, honestly, kind of the whole process that we follow.
So where did that process come from, to back up one step?
So the process came from, it was inspired by a book that's published by, maybe it can be in the show notes, by Jack Knopp and John Zaratsky, and Braden Cowitz are the three authors that are listed on Google Books. They kind of coined this methodology for quickly identifying big problems and creating a structure that'll help identify which problems need to be solved and learning something about that problem through testing. And the original kind of orthodox sprint took place over 5 days, and it was full time, and it had a lot of different kind of rules and constraints around it to help facilitate kind of maximum productivity and really focus on solving the quote unquote big problem. And what appealed to, like, it's hard to get 40 hours of a provider's time, let alone several providers. So kind of taking that approach, we tried to distill it down and pull out a couple of its specific activities that we thought would help us, well, really identify big problems. And in this case, we're more specific with the problems in that they're unmet, kind of hopefully tractable needs.
So basically, the point is sprint takes too long, but it's a good idea in theory. How do we make this shorter and more effective for what we're doing? And the input for that is a group of focused providers. And then, you know, how long does our session run now? Like, what, we took 5 days and turned it into what?
An hour.
And the output from that is?
The outputs are hopefully a list of prioritized unmet needs as vetted and judged by your panel, by your focus group. So that's kind of the direct output. I think kind of one of the secondary outputs that we're kind of playing with. Well, that's the primary direct output, but it also, in addition to that, because the process solicits several unmet needs from all of the participants, it also gives you a pulse on kind of what the entire problem landscape is, let alone, or some of that problem landscape. It can really help inform, among other things, maybe a focus shadowing or a more specific dive into a procedure or a set of a problem set that exists in this domain. So it's a mapping exercise, if nothing else.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I've been thinking of it, you know, having gone through, I think, a couple of these with you. A, I think they're very effective, but B, it seems like I'd only be thinking of it as the ranked list, but your point about having, I guess, what you call like a bigger picture, bird's eye view of the general direction of problems. And I mean, part of the process, which we'll get into in a minute, involves more than a short ranked list. There's more, you know, what comes out of the session is a lot more than just, you know, five or three prioritized problems. Most of the time, it's a lot more than that. But then you end up with sort of like, okay, what are the five or six or three priority needs that we should be thinking about? So is there anything else that a listener would need to gather before they start this? I mean, and then I want to walk into like the actual, walk us through the experience. So let's say five providers. How many providers do you think we need?
I think five is a good number. This is still very experimental, and I'm interested in kind of playing with the number of providers and how the dynamics might change. But I think five is a good number. We've had 10 in a room, I think. 10 plus, though some of them were very late.
Well,
and maybe not that useful to the process, but or weren't able to kind of contribute
as much.
Yeah, engage as much, I should say. Yeah. We were very grateful for everyone's participation. Shout out to VIR.
And on that note, right, I think that what I like about an odd number in general, and this is maybe an aside and general advice, right? Like if you're eventually, there's part of this process involves voting. And I find that an odd number is easier because you don't have to worry about tie breaking.
For sure.
So five providers and like what, a conference room?
A conference room. And some really just like a couple of supplies, though how you actually implement the ideation and capturing is totally up to the user. We've kind of followed the sprint recommendations and kind of their orthodoxy when it comes to using physical media, kind of, you know, staying away from screens and such. But, you know, there's no reason, I don't think there's a hard reason not to use tablets, making it digital. In fact, that's something we're going to have to flirt with soon.
Well, actually, I was just going to bring that up. I was like, I think in current times with in-person meetings being very limited, if not completely restricted to critical interactions, I think virtual makes a lot of sense. And in fact, I'm going to steal this methodology to some degree for my medical device design course because we can't go into the hospitals, right? But yeah, I mean, I think there's no reason that most of what we do couldn't be moved digitally, but maybe we can talk about that later. I mean, there's tools that exist. So, all right, so we get a conference room or maybe a digital conference room and some tool like to essentially keep track of stuff. So in the case of, you know, if we were going to do this online, I'd probably suggest something like Mural, which is a great place for those that are listening. If you haven't checked out Mural, definitely do that. Not a sponsor. But tools like Mural, where you can sort of collaboratively brainstorm and jot down ideas, I think are really helpful for these sorts of things. And then a Zoom meeting. And then I guess a discussion leader, right?
Yeah, you're right. Those are the essential components. Those are the probably necessary and sufficient components. Someone to lead the conversation, participants, and some way to write things down.
Yeah. Well, and actually, in my experience, in terms of the discussion leader, it's funny. This is not necessarily specific to Sprint, but, you know, in general, with open-ended processes, I've found that structure is a huge important factor when it comes to running these kinds of things. Because in the absence of structure, when you're working, you know, if we just brought people in a room and said, okay, go, you know, brainstorm ideas, it turns into real chaos. Because not only are you doing an open-ended, you know, not only is the goal open-ended, it's divergent by nature. Without the direction, it just sort of feels like, I don't know, it feels uncomfortable for, I think, a lot of people. So I think the discussion leaders are really critical in components. So, all right, so we've got a discussion leader, we've got five providers in a room or in a digital room, and we've got some way of tracking what's going on, whether that's digital via something like Mural or, you know, sticky notes and pencils or whatever. What's the step? So what can you walk us through the process? Like, how does it begin and get us all the way to the end?
Sure. So I think for us specifically, where it starts is kind of introducing the idea and the process to the participants. I think what needs to be explained is kind of who you are, what you're looking for. So in this case, it's fast track. You know, we're fast tracks. We are looking to understand the unmet needs in their given domain, and what we're specifically trying to do with this session. And so, you asked me before what has changed between the first time we ran this and then the latest couple of times. And I think most of it is honestly in how clean the facilitation is. So not sleeping on details like making sure the goal, the objective of the session. So for instance, like identifying high impact clinical needs experienced in X group, hospital medicine, say, like having that written down for the group to kind of like look at and be able to kind of refocus in on. First thing you start with is collecting names and attendees, kind of just names and emails, just some identifying, you know, who's attending. Then you kind of, there's a component of training, and the kind of the main bullet points of training are to introduce the concept of an unmet need, which is not always intuitive and needs some constraints around it. What we're trying to do, what the goal of our session is, and also kind of what the structure is that we're going to follow. So there's some component of training. Recently, we've kind of added, we try to preempt some of the concerns that come up with some of these groups when it comes to talking about devices and ideas. And those are usually concerns about intellectual property and kind of uncertainty around, you know, if I come up with an idea, are these people going to steal it? So we kind of preempt that and try to explain kind of what our approach is to IP and how it works in the university. Which is a completely different discussion. And then you start. So the way that we start right now is we kind of do a pre-sprint inspiration exercise. And so we try to seed a couple of, you know, we try to direct the provider's idea, you know, kind of thoughts as they kind of comb through their experience for unmet needs with certain prompting questions. So the ones that we currently use are like, you know, what was your most stressful clinical experience in the last 6 months and the last week and the last month? What type, you know, in your day-to-day, what types of patient type, you know, what type of patient conditions, patient types are most challenging to deal with clinically as a provider? Similarly, what kind of devices, equipment, diagnostics are the most frustrating, ineffective to use? So starting, allowing the team, the group to kind of sit quietly for a bit and kind of sit on these questions and see where their mind goes. So we do that for a certain period of time. And then we actually do the sprint. And so what this, I call it the actual sprint, the main activity of the sprint, which is just a 5-minute brainstorming. And the way that looks is that everyone sits down, they have some way of recording their ideas, be it physical or digital. And one of the, I think, the important rules to kind of enforce is to ensure that no one talks to one another.
Why is that, Nabil?
It's very, a couple of reasons. So this is what I was getting at when I imperfectly described kind of empowering providers. So like any other organization, like any other group of people, there are dynamics to that group. So there's probably some kind of hierarchy when it comes to power, influence, experience, blah, blah, blah. And we value diverse perspectives and diverse stakeholders. So for instance, if I were to come up with my own idealized kind of idyllic group of providers to run a session with, I would want the full gambit of kind of experiential levels, because I think, again, it comes down to this tension between experience and kind of being almost captured by conventional wisdom. And so you want both sides of that spectrum are valuable. But I think if you allow discussion, and we've actually seen these dynamics play out before, is that you'll see, especially when there is someone with power in the room, that the seeding of ideas will quickly anchor itself or even defer to the thoughts of whoever has power. So we've run sprints before where someone really influential, like a director of a group, was talking about their ideas and what they're excited about, which is awesome. But it ends up, you know, people start dancing to that tune specifically and aren't necessarily empowered and able to come up with whatever was on the top of their mind initially.
Like proverbially poisoning the well.
Right. Proverbially poisoning the well, for sure. And so that has been because we've seen kind of the negative consequences of that. And, you know, I just described one type of dynamic. There are all sorts of like dynamics and probably social biases that other people could tell us about in that room that we're trying to mitigate against. So that's the main rule, no talking. But going back to what that actual brainstorming session looks like, so it's kind of this, you know, Google Ventures calls it, quote unquote, working alone together. So everyone works alone, and they just, we do not control for quality. We just want quantity. Just come up with as many unmet needs that bubble to the top of your head. And hopefully some of the previous seeding activities, those questions have helped formulate what comes to top of mind. And they just come up with a bunch of problems, as many as they can. There are a couple of rules around it. So if you're doing sticky notes, we want each note to be separate. So there are a couple of, you know, like a couple of not rules, but recommendations that we give. But ultimately, we just want them to think and write a lot. And then near the tail end of that first 5 minutes, that's how long we're doing it, is we ask them to pick their top three. And it seems like it's been important, you know, when you ask someone to do their top three, they want to know how they should prioritize it. So we're still playing with how we coach that, or like what we tell them to prioritize, but we try to get them, again, kind of in the vein of empowering, just like pick the three that are most compelling to you. So after that 5 minute session, we have 3 minutes. We have a top three for each of the participants. So with hypothetical five, we'd have 15 problems at this point that are considered the top three by the individuals that generated them.
Okay. So there's like a initial sort of coaching session on what we're going to do, how the whole thing works, and what we're looking for. And then we move into this sort of like work silently together. What is it called?
Yeah, like work alone together, work silently alone together.
Thank you.
Something like that.
Yeah, work alone together. And then at the end of that, there's like a, okay, rank, you know, rank these internally using your own filters, if you will. Pick your top three. And if you have five providers and you have each one giving three, then that's 15 unmet needs, we'll say, or problems. And then from where, what happened? From there, what happens?
From there, we go around and we get each of the providers to read out loud what their top three is, what the top three ideas are that they came up with. And mostly we ask them to read it aloud because, you know, in that time crunch, sometimes the handwriting is not super clear. And also there are oftentimes there are a lot of acronyms that are used that are domain specific that at least I wouldn't be familiar with. And so it's just easier for them to read each of their top three unmet needs aloud. And then we post it for everyone to see on a whiteboard back when we were doing these in person. So we have 15 problems that we end up with on the board. And from there, we ask each of the participants to physically get up and look at the problems and spend 3 minutes to kind of think about, to just read each of the problems. And we ask them to vote at the end of that kind of absorption phase. We ask them to vote on what they thought the most compelling problems were.
And then just to peek behind the curtain on that one a little bit, what does our voting system normally look like?
So what we do is we give a fixed number of votes to each of the participants, and we let them allocate those fixed votes. So in most cases, we give them three stickers. That's how we've been doing it. And we tell them that these three stickers can be allocated to any of the problems that they want, however they choose to do so. So if you know, amongst the group of problems that are on the whiteboard, if one of them stands out entirely, give them all three votes. If you have three problems that equally, you know, are compelling to you, split your votes up. And by all means, if you think your problem is the best, vote for your own. But so that's how we have a fixed number of votes that every participant gets, and they get to allocate it however they want.
Yeah, that's awesome. So then at the end of this voting session, what do we do?
So at the end of this, we kind of prioritize based on the votes.
Yeah, how many do we prioritize?
At this point, it's almost a function of time. Usually we can get away with two or three. And once those problems are prioritized, that's when there is a benefit. So the benefit of having that panel right there is you can quickly kind of feel the room for how the group at large kind of thinks about this problem and how they react to aspects of this, whatever unmet need is being presented and has been chosen.
So there's a ranking process. And basically we say, all right, we're going to step through these in the order of rank, and then we're going to discuss them. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And then so the discussion leader or somebody sort of takes notes. I should back up. Have we been recording these?
we have been recording these, which has been really, really important, I think, because this activity, again, by design, is pretty hurried because you want to maximize the time you have with the providers. And it's also kind of, I guess, the theory is that it helps promote, like that flustered feeling helps promote quick decision-making. Now, at the tail end of this, we don't necessarily want quick decision-making, but usually there's just some kind of time constraint.
Yeah, so we discuss a couple of the needs, and the goal of that discussion, I think, is, if I understand correctly, Nabil, is to not only understand the problem better, but maybe define it clearly. So what is the trigger for moving on to the next problem?
That's a good question, and I think it really depends on the problem. I think part of our experience with this is that no matter what kind of training you do at the front end of these sessions, that there's still going to be a gap in what you ask and how the group ends up performing. And so some of the problems that make it are really blue sky problems. What I mean by that are kind of unmet needs that are very difficult to solve, like very obviously difficult, like curing a disease or something in that vein. Alternatively, it might be a problem that is not necessarily in FastTrax's wheelhouse. So process issues, kind of supply issues, things of that nature. So even though they're clearly a pain point and a frustration for the panel, they may not be unmet needs that we are well positioned to solve. So when we run into those kind of flags, we kind of try to pivot and move on to a problem that might have more potential with our group.
It sounds like there's two things here. One, it sounds like, A, you have to rely on that's, I think, one of the key roles of the moderator or the discussion leader, right? To be able to say, I think there's an implied authority that needs to be established at the beginning, right? Where it's like, I'm leading the discussion and I can insert myself where necessary and say, okay, this problem is something that we are going to can right away to say.
Yeah. And how to,
right.
How to convey that in maybe a tactful way that doesn't
yeah.
offend the participants.
Well, yeah. And so, I mean, I guess the second point, which is B, it seems like there's an application of a filter at that point too, almost like you could do it before the discussion, right? Where it's like, okay, and or during, right? So if it comes out during the discussion that this is definitely not in the wheelhouse of the team collectively, then we can just sort of say, hey, okay, this is a good one. We're going to put it on the back burner because this doesn't fall in our wheelhouse. But being explicit about that up front is, I think, important.
For sure. And I think, I'm glad that you bring that up because that is something that we're still trying to figure out how to convey and kind of how to enforce and moderate during the entire process.
Yeah. And I know, in the classroom when I do stuff like this, and not specifically this activity, but similar activities, I generally will enforce a time limit. And the reason I do that is because it's a divergent process. But that being said, time limit doesn't always allow you to capture the information you need. So I think in our case, there's a bit of nuance to this because we may have the opportunity to follow up with these providers. And also, there may be information that we really need to collect from that discussion that is important that may push the time limit if you were to enforce it over the boundary.
Yeah, that happens often. And so usually that by the tail end of these sessions, I prompt the group, whether it's possible for any of the participants to kind of stay a bit longer. And usually we get we can retain enough of the group to try to flesh out and get kind of basic kind of initializing information for each of the problems for our kind of subsequent activities.
So overall, if I were to summarize the whole process, I think I'm going to take a stab, fill in the gaps. We're collecting a small group of providers, usually five or so. We get them all together at the same time, and the time block that we allocate is 1 hour. And then at the beginning of that, we kind of introduce the discussion leader, introduces what we're going to do and the goal of that. So the what we're going to do is we're going to run through a sprint activity that is going to be sort of like a high-paced sort of series of individual activities that whose goal is to pop out a handful of, I'll call it pseudo-vetted unmet needs that are prioritized by the group. And the beginning of that session, after the introduction of the sort of here's how the process works, includes a little education on, what is an unmet need, in particular, as you alluded to, how to be solution agnostic where possible. And then in the case of the providers that we work with, sort of how we internally handle intellectual property, to make sure that everybody in the room is comfortable with the way that any idea is handled and the confidentiality surrounding that. And then I think we jump into the activity. And then the activity looks something like this, where we basically hand out sticky notes, or in the case of a digital system, we might work on something like Mural, and each person can double click to create a sticky note. But they're all working in their own area. And as you mentioned, the enforcement of the work alone together makes a difference to help eliminate any, you know, maybe dynamics that would come from the hierarchy of different levels or ranks of providers in the room is important for the discussion later. So we do 5 minutes of that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
The 5 minutes of work alone together, where everybody's just trying to brain dump as many different unmet needs that are pain points. And I think actually something I missed was that we also prompt them with some questions that might help their thinking, like, what are procedures that you've done in the last month that frustrate you, or pain points that have come up in the last week, month, year on a daily basis, pieces of equipment, that sort of stuff. So they go through a 5-minute exercise of just brain dumping as many unmet needs as they can. Then we organize them and everybody picks their top three based on their own internal ranking system to present to the group. And then after that, we put all those top threes onto the whiteboard, or in the case of something digital, it might be in the same spot of our digital workspace. And then everybody's given three sort of stickers or votes, and they're allowed to allocate those however they like. And then after that voting session, basically that we start by picking the top voted problem. And if there's a tie, I guess we just sort of toss a coin, but it doesn't really matter. And then we just discuss to try and understand it better. And at that point, Nabil, I might point out that we do have more than usually just the discussion leader. And in our case, we kind of have the luxury of our discussion leaders also being engineers. So it would be important for anybody who doesn't have an engineering background to potentially include an engineer or a business person in the discussion for that later portion, especially when you're trying to gather information, because the questions that come up are often tangential to what I think a provider might be thinking about, and vice versa, right? Like an engineer might not ask the question that a provider does.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm trying to internally test whether I wonder if an engineer...
Oh, maybe not an engineer, but maybe a non-provider?
Yeah, maybe a non-provider. I think, you know, to the extent that we've done this, I wonder if being an engineer has influenced how ask or kind of facilitate the sessions. We certainly ask a lot of questions. Usually what we're trying to do, I think, is kind of test the soundness of the unmet need, not only by asking directed questions, but also kind of seeing what responses are elicited when we push back on, let's say, the severity of a problem, the frequency of a problem, blah, blah, blah. And I wonder if being an engineer is essential to that. Or a non-provider. Sorry. You already clarified. But yeah, it makes me curious now how a provider would facilitate.
I mean, and in the traditional sprint methodology, right, like there, it does, you know, the methodology calls out the requirement for different types of people, I guess you could call it, like, or different roles.
Stakeholders and different, yeah.
Exactly. And I kind of wonder about that. You know, the ultimate goal of the sprint methodology in the framework of what Fast Tracks does is to, you know, like essentially increase the efficiency of our capturing of unmet needs. And the final goal of all this, of course, is to create new medical technologies. And so that's the reason that I think my initial thought was to say, you know, it helps to have an engineer in the room as a facilitator. Maybe I would generalize that to say somebody who has experience with medical device design, I think would be a good, or medical technology commercialization, because, you know, there's just things that may not come up as questions that are essential to the success of the ultimate solution that can be teased out early on that may not be obvious to those that are like deeply entrenched in the actual delivery of care. And I think that comes back to the point of the shadowing discussion earlier. Like, you know, shadowing is helpful insofar as it might lend a new perspective to an existing technique or set of techniques.
And it's certainly helpful to the shadower, who gets to absorb a lot of information and learn about a new domain.
I think the sprint methodology as applied here, I don't even know what we're calling it, but our mini sprints are
we're calling them sprints. Problem discovery sprints, I think, is clinician sprints.
And
we got a couple
I feel like they've
flavors.
Done, yeah, they've really, I think it's changed the way I think about problem ID, first of all, because I think I was really, you know, speaking of an outside individual bringing a new perspective, right? Like, I'm sort of traditionally trained in the biodesign technique. And so I think I was at first not averse to the idea, but it was so disruptive that I was like, wait a minute, is this really going to work? And I have to say, like, I really think it has improved the workflow of what we do, because it just increases the volume and like the focus of what we're doing.
And I think the costs, while there are hidden costs of this, are lower, not only for our time, but also the time of the providers. And I think that really lowers the barrier and really the return on investment for time when it comes to problem mining.
I would love to have a discussion with you separately about how we capture all this, because we, you know, Nabil, you've been working on a back-end sort of internal system for cataloging and organizing, and I think it's incredible, the stuff that you've done. Yeah. I think we should talk about that at another time, but
we should.
You know, I think the sprint methodology lends itself well to capturing some of the information that we're going to put into that system early on, earlier than we may have before, and helping direct our research when we're looking for more information on those problems. And we're kind of running short on time here. So I had a couple of closing questions, I think, for you. So, you know, first of all, where would you direct the listeners to get educated on the techniques we're talking about? And like, do you have any resources or suggestions to folks that might be thinking about implementing this?
So I think one of the wonderful things that the Google Venture Sprint folks did is that they made kind of a lot of the facilitator notes and kind of summaries of the activities publicly available. And so there are these nice, like, short PDFs that you can find if you Google, I think probably Google Venture Sprint Design Sprint Activities, and you can look at not only how they originally kind of constructed those activities, as well as the kind of the facilitator notes for someone who might be moderating one of those groups and trying to coach other people through one of these activities. So that's something, I think, you don't have to read the whole book. I think if you want to get started on this quickly, I would just kind of look up those tangents. I'm interested to hear more of your questions.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like we'll throw the link for the resources that you described into the show notes, and probably on our website as well. I mean, there's a few things that are coming up down the pike, but I might sort of raise the stakes here and say, you know, I think for anybody interested in this, you know, as we develop it, it's certainly distinct and slightly different from the actual sprint methodology. And I don't know of any other techniques that are, you know, quite as compact. So I'm going to go as far as to say that if anybody's interested, they could probably just reach out to us in Fast Tracks. And maybe one of the things that we can think about doing is prioritizing at some point this sort of, like, you know, an actual set of templates or something that we can distribute for folks that are interested in this technology.
It's a cool idea. I like it.
But anyway, that we can get to that at a later point. But yeah, I think for now, if anybody's interested, they could just pop us an email. But anyway, those are most of my questions, Nabil. Thanks so much for talking about this sort of sprint technique that we're in the midst of sort of evolving and applying.
Yeah, still iterating on.
Yeah, oh, I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really helpful to learn. I've learned a lot just from working with you on this. And I should say working with you in the sense that I've had the opportunity to participate in some of these sprints. And I think that what you have done to create this methodology for our application is really awesome. I think it's really changed the way I think about the way I do problem ID. And I'm hopeful that anybody who is interested in this sort of stuff might look into it, because I think it's really a much more efficient approach. And then it couples well with doing follow-up with shadow, right? Like, when you have a focus and you go into shadow, I think it really makes a difference. I think I called this out on one of our earlier podcasts. Like, one of the tips it was a podcast that we decided not to release, but one of the pieces of advice that I give to people is, like, if you're going to go in and shadow, have a reason for it. And this is, like, such a good way to focus. And I just think it's more efficient. So,
yeah, I think that's how it's probably going to permanently shift, or at least shift a lot of our workflow, is that, yeah, it allows you to spend your time more efficiently and in a more focused manner. And you give me too much credit for kind of coining this technique. I think it's kind of a pretty intuitive, not creative mapping of the sprint activities to 1 hour. But I appreciate it nonetheless.
I think that the fact that you identified this as a viable option and, like, sort of massaged it into what it is now, I think is the genius of it, honestly.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it works really well, and I'm excited to keep working on it.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I'm literally going to use this for my class, because I just think it lends itself well to online, and it also lends itself well to quickly and efficiently using people's time. So,
yeah, I love that. And I also love the idea of really effectively, quote unquote, training more providers into thinking about unmet needs and kind of, yeah, please do so. That's mutually beneficial. I'm excited.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, so anybody listening, talk to Nabil now. Reach out to Fast Tracks. We'd love to work on it, I think, with anybody that's interested in, and anybody interested in working with us on this sort of stuff or being a participant in one of these, just let us know. Well, thanks, Nabil. I appreciate your time today. I think that was really helpful capture of the summary of how we do things. And I'm sure we'll have more discussions on other tools that we're developing. But yeah, any final words?
None. Thanks for having me. And I will say that part of the kind of the latest iterations of these sprints are purely from the feedback from the team. So shout out to you and Nicole and Andy and everyone else who has helped kind of shape the structure that we're pursuing today.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Thanks for all the work that you've done. This is great. So yeah, for those of you that are interested, just check us out online on our website. And then if you're interested in getting involved, you know, pop us an email. Our information's on the website. But thanks, Nabil, for joining us today. And we'll talk to you again in the future.
Cool. Take care.
See ya.
We hope you enjoyed listening to a preview of our new problem discovery techniques. We will check in occasionally on the progress and keep you up to date on any changes we make. If you're interested in learning more or have any suggestions from your own experience, we would love to hear from you. Send a message to guidewire@unc.edu or visit our website, guidewire.unc.edu. Follow us on Twitter @guidewirepod and follow us on your favorite streaming service. Hope you enjoyed. We'll talk to you next time.
Learn more about our exciting activities, opportunities, and team by subscribing to the Guidewire podcast on your favorite listening service. If you have identified an unmet medical need or are interested in learning more about our process, visit us at guidewire.unc.edu. You have been listening to Guidewire, a direct line to medical device innovation.